This week on RSVNB Update, we got our hands full with archaeology at Spades in Centiston. There's nothing micro about this update. We also detail nerfs to Greater Ricochet and Greater Concentrated Blast, and delve into more shady Elder God Wars banter. This is RSVNB Update, episode 843, recorded Thursday, August 19th, 2021. Archaeology in Spades. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis, you're here. You've made your way into Centiston, finally.
You know, and I ran into some stuff. It's a little dark. I got jumped by some Dragonkin thugs one time. Not happy about that. But yeah, I'm down here, and it's so good to be back in archaeology. It's so good to be digging in the dirt again.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing, and to help us discuss the Centiston archaeology update and some things that have ruffled feathers in the community again this week. Thaxi, welcome back.
The spades, Shane. The spades, they're coming to get me, I swear to God.
We're going to get to the spades, because I caught that as well. And it wasn't until I took a look around some of the sites and realized that people, they aren't just memeing about this. There's actually spades out there that are causing problems that might surface in the future that we need to talk about. But, you know, it wouldn't be archaeology if it wasn't for these little things hidden every which way that wind up having an impact at some point in the future, just like that final Inquisition mystery. But nonetheless, if you guys want to join us, follow along. Our full show notes are at update.rsbnb.com. I am Shane12088 in game. He is Tanis79, and Thaxi, I think you're just at Thaxi, right?
I am.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful. Always good to have names without numbers. I love that. But you can also join us in Friends Chat, Bits Bytes. So Centiston Archaeology, what they called a micro-archaeology site, spans from level 60 to 67. But you messaged me, Tanis, and you're like, this doesn't feel micro, so what were they talking about with this? That was at least your impression of it.
And it still is. I kept looking for, I would start in one area and I'd see another little archaeology symbol. I'm like, huh, let's go over there and check that out. And I mean, that was throughout the whole city. I mean, even in, you know, the boss fight area. And then you start getting pages, you start getting little clues.
Uh-huh.
And then you start hearing things and you're like, there is a ton of lore. There's a ton of story here too. What's micro about it? And I mean, if this site stretched the level bands that we are used to in a typical archaeology site, I don't think the word micro would be involved.
No. And looking at it, that's clear. What they were meaning is that it's only those bands from 60 to 67. And I just have 2 points on this. This is, if we go back, I remember our beginning archaeology coverage. I think it was week 2 or week 3, maybe the skilling side of it. We said the only part that so far has felt like a grind has been that tiny, tiny little bit at Everlight in the late 50s and early 60s. And lo and behold, here we are right now. This fills in that gap.
Yeah, for sure.
And
I mean, 3 mysteries is a little shy for a full dig site.
Right, 3 mysteries
only. Materials, but 5 research and 7 different locations spread across a map. I mean, that's pretty hefty for sure.
Yeah, and you know, when you go into each of these as well, it feels as though you're partaking in a full site. So I can see why you say that, Tanis. And the content that is associated with said mysteries isn't something that is just, you know, a couple lore pages here and there. It's actually really substantive, to the point where the first mystery, Empty Children, has 6 book pages. The second one, Night Theater, has 5 book pages. And the last one, Secrets of the Inquisition, has 9 pages in total.
And throughout the whole thing, there's those spades, man. I swear to God, they're everywhere.
Yeah, we'll get to that next, but I just want to say one thing that people are probably going to be really looking forward to with this. And we are going to get the band back together, and we will be doing a Lore Diggers episode for Sintistan Archaeology. It has to be done. It honestly has to be done. With where we left off at the end of Caradet and talking about the Inquisition, having a Secrets of the Inquisition mystery here, it has to be done. So we're going to be doing that.
Yeah. And don't get the wrong idea. We're not coming back with David Lee Roth. Probably more with Sammy Hagar. But we're going to be here.
And it's going to be so fun in doing it. And I also just want to point everybody again, and this is one of the very underappreciated features of archaeology. If you head into your journal and you look at the pages with the Xerosian artifacts on it, you can see high quality art for each of the artifacts you can uncover at Sintistan.
And description too. Yeah. Of like what they would have been used for and what they're represented and what the art on them actually looks like beyond the in-game icon, right? What it actually represents. Which is so like neat hearing about things that you've forgotten, like how Zaros kind of gained a lot of his power in addition to his birth to begin with, was slaying the Hydra god, right? So all that stuff is referenced in that, and they really, it brings it all together and it gives it a lot of life.
Yeah, and so for instance on the funerary urn of smoke, urns empowered with the ancient magic of smoke would be used as the marker for the deceased, placed at their grave for days after their passing. Anyone would be able to look in the air and see a trail indicating a life lost. For blood, I'm only going to read a couple more of them. For blood, the blood of the dead was collected in these funerary urns as a reminder of the life lost. The urns would then be magically infused so that the blood could remain a constant source of ancient magic, creating a lasting legacy for the deceased. And once again, this is further enhancing everything we learned about Zerosian culture at Caradet.
Yeah.
And I think this is probably the part of the Elder God Wars that we all wanted, but we never knew we were going to get. You remember, Tanis, when we first started talking about this, we said, oh, there has to be archaeology. And I said, I don't know. But lo and behold, here we are.
I know. You were a believer, Shane. You were not a believer, but I knew something cool would come someday, and can we just soak in the fact that I can remember early on talking about what Sintistan would have looked like, what it would have been like. I remember hearing discussions before my time, even on this podcast, I mean, when you think about it, Sintistan's one of those things, kind of like Prif was in a way. I mean, when it comes to war, and now we're here. We had such an eye opening, or like a look into the world of the Xerosians with Caradet. And now we get the city, and it's and we're doing what we love to do the most. Well, one of the things I love to do the most. Well, Daxi too. He's in there. He's kicking Carapac in the teeth. But you know, you get all of that. You get all of that here. I don't know.
It is what we love to do with archaeology. When I found out this was coming, I thought, okay, I didn't know how much I needed to hear that we were going to be getting an update like this, but when I heard we were getting an update that was archaeology themed, I thought, okay, I need this. This is going to be probably one of my favorite updates of the year, and lo and behold, here we are. We have it. I just want to go through a couple of locations that you'll see and point out some things we see on the map before we talk about Thaxi's spades here, because...
Well, it's... it's classic idle clicker RuneScape, right? And it's delivering on the skill, the premise of the skill, which is the archaeology. It's giving us lore in that classic format, which is just great.
Yeah. So we have the Sentistan Cathedral excavation site that includes ministry and cathedral excavation hotspots. And one thing that, if you look at the map in terms of where they are compared to where they actually are on Game World, they're kind of a little bit off. So if you're walking into the cathedral and you're not sure where those are going to be, those ones are the biggest offenders. So just keep that in mind, that the minimap will differ slightly on that. Then,
if you look to the west of that archaeology site, there's spades.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go have a look at one of those right now. But then you also have the marketplace excavation site, which has the marketplace debris and the Inquisitor remains, which gives, obviously, Inquisitor's mask, the Inquisitor's seal. And, you know, I imagine there's going to be a little something-something there about Sliskay. And then, aside from that, you also have the Colosseum debris inside the area where you fight Carapac, which Tanis got to experience first. And, you know, the Needle is still just up there sitting, relaxing, watching you excavate as you do. So, I really enjoyed running around to all these sites. I'm actually still working on it. I've been taking it slow. I'm just working on the last few pages for the Inquisition mystery to unlock that area across the bridge. But whereabouts are these spades that we're looking at from the west of the cathedral? It's just
right by the doors.
Okay.
They're right just inside the doors next to that site.
All right, because I saw
I mean, there's another set of them down by the river. There's another set of them up by the market. Yep. They're everywhere, Shane. The spades, they're everywhere.
Dig with spades. Nothing interesting happens.
Sure. Sure, nothing interesting happens, as far as we know.
So what's your...
Bum, bum, bum.
Without getting too lore heavy, what's your take on what's going to happen with the spades? Or
I mean they're digging, man. That's it. We don't know. The mysterious spades. We had the mysterious monolith. Now we've got the mysterious spades. I don't know what's going to happen with the spades, Jamflex. What's happening? What's with the spades, Jajix? That's it.
And I'd like to point us back to when archaeology first launched. Do you remember the tagline for the update?
That war is coming.
Yep, dig deep. War is coming.
Mm-hmm. Here we are.
So obviously we dug deep. We're in Sentistan, but perhaps this is a sign we could go even deeper.
Oh, Inception. We must go deeper. Layers on layers. We're now in the war, but it's... so many good layers. We must keep digging.
And, you know, I think there's going to be lots of questions about when this is all going to full itself up in terms of... I'm trying to work Bic in here, but I'm sorry, I can't work Bic into that.
But I think this could be a warning.
All right.
The spades?
I think it's a warning from the Cambridge mob.
Oh, my.
Why?
Tell me more.
That's what's going to happen to you. You're going to need a spade. You're going to get buried.
Oh, we got a lot of funerary urns lying around. I'm just saying, we now have a whole lot of very recently refilled funerary urns that the Archaeology Guild and Museum are just collecting stockpiles of.
Yeah, I don't know who they're trying to send a message to at Jagex, but I feel like this is like the horse head from The Godfather. This is a message. I don't know why. Who can know what the Cambridge mob is really thinking.
And, you know, I think we definitely got to get the lore diggers on this one as well, because they wouldn't just put these here for no meaning, because...
I mean, the lore diggers have to have tools.
Yeah, we do, and I don't think we've ever picked up tools before, so maybe this is something we'll do with this and carry them on through all the various dig sites out there. But I'm not in a position right now to comment on what these could do, but they're definitely going to be there. But
no one knows. They're definitely going to be there. They are the mysterious spades.
But we need to make the caveat that this is a Mod Raven update.
So
what I'm telling you is
they're going to kill you. It's a warning.
They're probably not being used in a trading sequence, which would have been my only other actual non-meme suggestion for these. It's like, maybe you use an item on them. No, it's just Raven doing Raven things. What are the spades, Raven?
Exactly. And that's it could just be a Mod Raven thing. But nonetheless, I also just want to focus on some of the mysteries, how they're not all straight up dig, 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 get pages. You need to do some stuff within the city to unlock some of the pages. And one of the pages actually comes from a research assignment as well.
Some of them you get handed by people. Some of them you actually have to go back in level order to lower level spot in order to find a couple of them too, which is interesting because they don't tell you that.
Yeah.
And you have to get them in order. So thanks, Wiki. I'm a sorry cheater, but here we are.
Well, I've actually got pages out of order with this.
Oh, a couple of them you can. I think the Inquisition mystery you must. I think you have to get them. Okay. I guess I don't know that for sure.
So you're saying the Inquisition one has to be in order? Cause
I believe so. And there's one page that comes only from a level 60 spot, is my understanding. And again, this is early Wiki, so it's not been fact checked as far as I know.
Right.
But
right. Yeah, the first Inquisition page comes from the 60 spot. Then we're at 62, 64, 64. And then you got to do something with urns for page 5. Spoilers for anybody who doesn't care or doesn't worry about that. And then at the end, you're all the way back to 60. So I don't know if it has to be in order. I might spend some time working on that. But I do know I got some of the pages for Empty Children and Night Theater out of order.
Yes, I did as well.
Okay. So we know that can happen then. We also have the relic, of course. That's what you get when you complete Secrets of the Inquisition. And yeah, I mean, we effectively talked about what it did last week. It's
very nice for dungeoneering.
It's a relic form of the mobile perk. Allows you to have the cooldown of Surge Escape and Bladed Dive. And very good point for dungeoneering because you can't bring a weapon with the mobile perk into the dungeon. So that's useful there. Let's see. I don't think there's anything else reward-wise that we need to talk about with this because people are going to be up on the relic and the 18 new artifacts. But, of course, all the discussion we want to have on this will be lore-focused, which, you know, seeing the spades, we gotta find a week to slot this in. I think we'll probably wind up doing this the week after after the Wenfront releases, which on that note, we are recording this on Thursday evening. So for anybody hearing this on Friday, they have a live stream scheduled where they will be detailing what that next front looks like. So we'll have all the details of that and the forthcoming Yak Track on next.
We've had a teaser image, which is fairly telling, but we don't know for sure yet.
Yeah, it looks some form of glacier, doesn't it? That's been the general sentiment among Clan
Quest,
I think. Well,
the image they posted an image just today or yesterday on the official RuneScape Twitter, and that original image has a very, very large glacier prominently in the background. And the image that they posted shows only the Viking without the glacier present. So I took that to mean that the glacier has moved elsewhere or been taken elsewhere, likely somewhere in the city of Sentist. And that would be my guess. I was very skeptical, frankly, of where the glacier idea was coming from before this, but it really does seem that that's what they're going for.
Yeah,
or they're just playing with the community. Yeah.
Right. It could have been a typo or something.
They could be very much saying, it's not that. Stop it.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Very true.
12 hours from now.
But overall, Sentist and Dig Site, I think it scratched the archaeology itch and will keep me very busy through the weekend. I should have some time this weekend to dig deep into it. Last weekend was kind of iffy on that, but this weekend is looking good on that front. So
You know what I liked about this was I'm an XP guy. I like to get, you know, decent rates, stuff like that. And if it's not, you know, worth it for anything, there's not, you know, I need to have a kind of a purpose. And this level ban for all intents and purposes would have been the same situation you had with Menophos, right? But yet it wasn't, because when I went back here, I never thought about that. No. Like, I never thought about it once.
It was just fun. Didn't matter what the XP was.
It was just fun.
Yeah.
And I think we need to contact some kind of combat person on this, who is, and Thax, you are a combat person, but you're also very heavily involved in the Clan Quest lore side of things, but somebody who is just a PVMer and who has this update coming across their desk, what did they think of that this week? I think that's a question we should have answered.
I think the completionists enjoyed that they could do it in under 12 hours. I think the non-completionists appreciated they could ignore it.
Right.
And not lose anything.
Right, because there was no grace period on everything that came out today.
Week. People that had the that have completionist capes are okay with just grinding through content like this. It's something they can do in 6 hours.
And I mean,
right?
level 60, you're not dealing with the high HP kind of excavation spots you find at high level archaeology.
Right.
You can go relatively quick. So
it's pretty quick.
And materials, once again, we probably have a lot of these in our bank. In fact, I think the only thing I was short on was purple.
I needed nothing from this. Yeah, I was set. I kept, I think, 300 to 500 of each material, and whatever I had was enough to refill 2 to 3 of every artifact. So it was great.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point. One final note on this before we move on to the next thing. There is actually a different collector in addition to Volusia, and this is somebody who has been in game since Desert Treasure came out, and that's Eblis at the mirrors in the desert just south of the bandit camp.
Right at the lodestone. Good choice. Easy to get to.
And the fun part about this is that he played a major role in Desert Treasure, and ever since then, you really had nothing to do with him, but lo and behold, here.
He's a signature hero?
No, he's not a signature hero.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You're thinking of Ozma.
He was just a quest giver NPC who was kind of pivotal in organizing you to proceed through the Desert Treasure quest.
Yeah, and if you look at the wiki page for his article, they did intend on updating his graphical image with archaeology when archaeology came out. But they didn't do that this time. I don't know if it was just incomplete, but somebody had pictures of his
leftover.
So I just wanted I just wanted to point out that he has a purpose in mid-level archaeology now.
So. Very nice.
I love this update. I would take one of these each month if I could at a different spot in RuneScape. Though maybe we might get tired of it over time, but I wouldn't mind having more of these. I'll just say. I don't know at what frequency would make sense, but I just wouldn't mind having more of them.
I want a gnome archaeology. If we can't finish off what's going on, and maybe we can find out where they came from.
Yes. Once every couple Slayer releases, that'd be great. Just give me an archaeology mini dig site. Give something for the Slayers, something for the Skillers. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it all winds itself in nicely for that as well. So that's good. All right, let's move on because, of course, this week we also have other updates that come along, and you know, combat got a little bit of a buff and a little bit of a nerf in some spots, but some of the good things people should be happy about: teleport restrictions have been removed from Virago, Solak, Next Angel of Death, Rise of the Six, Liberation of Mazcap Raids, and Araxor.
God bless. Honestly, overdue.
Yeah.
I mean, I learned Araxor in an Evolution of Combat beta in like 2014, 2015, one of those way back forever ago. Because it was just, I died 16 times before I got my first kill. I was on like Death Lotus Darts or some kind of nonsense, and it would have been so expensive and took like 3-4 hours. So just with the instance costs, I'm out almost a mil, plus all the supplies, like having being able to teleport out to save death costs and supplies is so great for so many of those bosses, especially like Virago. I still die at Virago. If a teammate dies and you're in a place where you can't teleport out, you can't stop being attacked, that's it. You just kind of accept it, and this feels great. So overdue. I will say also that the RS guy made a vlog within like a week or two before this update happened that was very much like, hey, this needs to change, by the way. And then it did. And they didn't justify it with that, but it seems fairly cause and effect that he has worked with them before. So I do wonder if that's creator-driven change, that it's just somebody realized, oh, wait, this guy's right, we should change this. So either way, great change.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense. You don't want to punish anyone for, you know, like, say you need to abandon the fight in the middle because something is going on in your house, or maybe you realize you forgot something. Teleport solves all that.
You got invited to a raid team that filled up faster than you were expecting, and now suddenly everybody is waiting on you to finish your very slow rack skill.
There you go.
Whatever it be.
There you go.
Yeah.
They also say that the restriction will remain in place at Telos due to the nature of the loot streaking system, which makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Spells. Divine Storm now deals the correct damage. Previously, past level 60, it gained 6 damage per level rather than 9.6. Okay. Surge spells will now scale to T99 damage, which was previously only tier 92, which is only an issue now because, of course, we have the Fractured Staff of Armadil in game, which is a tier 95 weapon. Smoke and Shadow Blitz spells now scale to tier 92 damage to match Ice and Blood. I'm pleased with this because I always felt that you got penalized for using Smoke and Shadow over Ice or Blood when you might have wanted the effect of Smoke or Shadow, or the elemental type of it.
Yes.
And just for the clarification out there for anybody wondering, smoke is, of course, air. Shadow is, of course, earth. Barrage spells now scale to tier 99 damage. Why do we need that when we only have tier 95 staff in game?
I imagine...
Because it scales on the weapon primarily, right?
The it lowest. Does. So the way that works is it scales to whichever is capped lower. So the lower of weapon or spell.
Got it. Yeah, that's what I thought. Aurora spells now scale to tier 99 damage as well.
Yep, cool.
All right. Increase the range of the Ruby Aurora effect from 2 tiles to 5 tiles, which when you think about it, staying within 2 tiles of someone on RuneScape, that's kind of a hard thing to do in normal circumstances, so 5 is good.
It is, those spells probably need to be looked at again by the PVM community, because they have some unique effects, and I haven't looked at them in a while. But now that they're viable to use, I think the Aurora spells could be interesting to play around with.
Yeah, I've always seen them as kind of the beginning of a support magic kind of class that never really got
off the ground. Yeah, which would be cool.
Yeah. But that's topic for another show, of course.
The buffer role.
Yeah.
Buffer and debuffer.
I would love to have that in game, because in Star Trek Online, aside from tanking, that was my other main thing.
It's your support.
PvP. Yeah. Spell tooltips will now state which damage tier they scale up to. Good. We need to get this kind of information in front of players.
It's very evident now. This seems to me more like a bug fix, frankly, than a balance change. It's just things are now working as they were intended to work and as people expected them to work. And there's more clarity. So great job. No notes.
All right. Are we starting off with Grico or GCB, Greater Concentrated Blast?
Let's start off with Greater Rico. We've got just a couple portions of what they wrote there that I think are really worth discussing.
So, put simply, Greater Ricochet, Jagex felt the damage was too strong. And, you know, you ask anybody in the PVM community, it was seen as a must-have ability. And I think after this... will be, and I might be, you know, putting the cart before the horse of where we're at on that. You can tell me how you feel on that, but the important points that you noted are is that the first 3 hits remain unchanged at 20 to 100% damage, 10 to 50% damage, and 10 to 50% ability damage for all 3, respectively. Any additional hits as a result of the Caroming perk have been toned down to 5 to 15% ability damage, down from 10 to 50%, and enchanted ruby bolts will no longer scale their damage down when triggered as a part of Greater Ricochet, which is something that it did previously, which that one caught my eye. And this is what we've been talking about, that you don't just bring things down, you bring something up to compensate.
Yeah. Well, let's start with that one, because that was one that I think a lot of people had just didn't
realize.
The
Ruby Bolts, right?
Yeah. The spell was working as intended, in that any additional damage dealt to the primary target by additional bolts fired at it by the Greater Ricochet ability was halved. That was how it was written in the ability description. And since Ruby Bicriminal Bolts are they just apply a percentage of the opponent's life points and then that damage up to like the hit cap. They were getting halved as well when they activated. So instead of getting a 10,000 damage hit when you hit that hit cap, you were getting a 5,000 damage hit when you fired off the Greater Ricochet, which is effectively half the time you fired off a Greater Ricochet, you would get a Ruby Bolt proc. That's kind of the way the math worked. It's maybe not quite that high, but that's a simplified way to think about it. So basically, this means that Ruby Back Bolts now work as intended, or as you would, as expected, probably, with the Greater Ricochet ability, which is good. And there's also, so let's do very quick math on what this means. There's two parts to this, right? Firstly is, how much worse is it than it was before, just in terms of your total damage?
All right.
And how does it compare now to other abilities, right? We'll do a bottom line TLDR for both of those. It is a meaningful nerf, but it shouldn't impact anyone's ability to do content, and it is still the best ranged ability. So let's dig into
numbers. And that's what it says on the tin right there, what you just said. Best ranged ability.
Right. So digging into the numbers very surface level, right? The ability lost 80% weapon damage on its average damage when used with the Chroming Perk, which I think is still worth using as well, for the record. Most range rotations for people that have this ability, they'll use it about 5 times a minute, so we're down about 400% weapon damage, roughly 10 to 12,000 damage a minute. The person who's using this has probably well-developed rotation, will give them 250 to 350 damage a minute, which means this nerf comes to a 4 to 5% damage loss for most people using the ability. That's your tagline. It's just, again, a sizable nerf, but there's nothing that you could do before this update that you couldn't do with it now.
And you're saying these numbers are for somebody who is well versed in the way to run a ranged action bar and probably doing
this is somebody who's
250
using
to 300 hits
manual.
A minute, right?
Yes, this is somebody who's using full manual, who is or revolution, but without manually activating all of their thresholds and ultimates. They're canceling their snipe after the third tick. They're doing, you know, they're running a ranged rotation at a relatively high level. That's the type of person that I will imagine will have afforded the Greater Ricochet ability. And for people that have lower damage a minute, this, you know, will do potentially proportionally lower damage, but that 4 to 5% should hold up, generally speaking. So that's the overall damage. Now let's talk about how it compares to other abilities, right? Our comparison points for this is that we've gone from 240% weapon damage as our average damage down to 160. This has leapfrogged below Corruption Shot at 200% and Snipe at 172%. But the thing that was maintained with this ability is that it is still hitting 7 times. And this is where the Chroming Perk really kind of shines, is that the Chroming Perk is doing 40% of that 160% damage. So it's only a quarter now instead of being a much larger part. Actually, instead of being half, it is now a quarter of the damage. So they reduced 3/4 of the impact that perk had. With that said, the perk will still cause the thing to hit 4 additional times. Each of those additional hits has the ability to activate poison. If you're on a Bucriminal Bolt, each of those hits has the ability to activate a Bucriminal Bolt. If you're on a Blood Reaver, each one of those hits can activate their Blood Reaver to then activate your
what
poison.
What does this mean for Hydrix Bolts?
They're still busted. On average, it'll still activate one Hydrix Bolt every time you use it, because Hydrix Bolts are 1 in 7 chance to activate, and they hit 7 times. I really, really, as a total tangent, think that Hydrix Bolts should be made so that their passive ability, like, they cannot be activated while their passive ability is present.
Right.
Which is to say that when you have that extra adrenaline gain, you don't then just get an extra 10% and refresh that buff.
Yeah.
I think that would make Hydrix Bolts relatively balanced and decrease their use to the point where they would be a reasonable price for when you actually want to use them as a switch. But
that's aside the point from today, folks.
It is. So what I was saying before, it's alone without weapon poison or anything, it's 160% weapon damage, which still makes it the third best basic. So that's if you are not using Bucriminal Bolts and you're on a target you can't poison, which is to say if you're bow camping with a two-hand range on a bow is unquestionably the worst combat style in the game right now, and I absolutely love it. I still do racks this way, so meh. I still get fantastic, you know, I'm still doing damage in that same range as everybody else, so they can just deal. But anyways, the math with this with the changes, you're still hitting, if you are just on a poisonable target, you're hitting 210% damage. If you're on a poisonable target, you're also using Emerald Bolts, you're hitting about 265%. If you're on a poisonable target with Poison, Emerald Bolts, and a Reaver, you're hitting 360% damage, compared to, once again, 172% for Snipe, and 200% for for Corruption Shot. Which is to say that this thing, against any target that is poisonable or any target that you're using but criminal bolts on, you're hitting probably 350% average with Ruby Backs on a poison immune target. Any of those targets, if you're using but criminal bolts or if you're using anything else, this is like almost twice the damage of the next best basic ability you have. So everybody has to build Adrenaline. This should still be first on everybody's bars if you have the ability unlocked.
So at the end of the day,
that's a story.
So at the end of the day with this, it's still very powerful. It's just not where it used to be. And
it's not busted.
Right.
Yeah.
And to quote some people, this isn't going to, make them tank, make the greater Ricochet ability codices tank all the way down.
Everything that you could previously do with this ability unlocked, you should still be able to do with this ability unlocked. There's no damage points I can think of where you're not hitting anymore. You have to work a little bit harder potentially for some damage checks like Solax Core, but that's about it.
And overall, you feel comfortable with that 4-5% drop in damage overall?
I do. I mean, once again, like they said in the post, this is still the most powerful thing. This is still totally worth unlocking. It's less powerful than it was, and it brings a ranged back to maybe a little bit more in check. I'm fine with it. It doesn't impact me any of the choices I will make about what content I will be doing, and it seems like it's healthier for the game. So sure, all the better, right?
Yeah, and we know that because every time David comes on, he says you can do this boss with tier 80, he says, and he can do that, of course, but we can have the general.
It is doable with tier 80.
It's doable with tier 80, but yeah. You can get by with, tier 90s for pretty much everything, unless you're, going for those ultimate
tier
DPS
90s and 95 prayer and budget, budget armor and weapon perks will work for absolutely everything in the game. You do not need anything more than that. Some people, feel that, dedication to their team, whatever it is, if they have the money to make the upgrades, fine, but you don't need it. It's not necessary.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense. Okay. Tanis, any questions?
Yeah. But no. Not really.
Hit me.
I have no intelligent questions. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's important that you ask any questions you might have.
No, dude, that's good. From what it sounds like, from the outside looking in, seems like it's a good nerf. I'm kind of surprised that they made PVM take some medicine, but I mean, it looks like they did, so good.
We might be overdue for it. It's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. All right. Let's move on to Greater Concentrated Blast, which is, of course, the newest one that came from Carapac.
Yeah. And if you're looking at that news post, it's the third and the fifth bullets that are the bullets that they've actually... That's what the actual change is. They kind of hit it in the middle there, which I'm not a huge fan of the patch note.
Yeah, and I mean... So do you want me to read just what was there, or do you want me to read the entire thing? Because I think it makes
read
more...
Read what's there. That's the third and fifth bullets, if you'd like to. Unless you want to read the whole thing, then please go
for it. In a live greater concentrated blast, greater concentrated blast will currently deal 181.9% ability damage. Okay. And the adjusted values bring the average down of a greater concentrated blast to 160.2 ability damage.
Right. And they've done a bunch of math around this to say this is how it compares to regular concentrated blast. And this is why it's still great, which I don't know why they put in for this and not for greater ricochet, because effectively they've done the same thing for both nerfs, which is to say they have kept the number of times you hit the boss the same, which is 6 times per 10 seconds for greater concentrated blast and 7 times per 10 seconds for greater ricochet. And they've kept the critical chance buff on greater concentrated blast, which is where, frankly, a large portion of its damage does come from that too, like a notable portion, not maybe the majority, but a good portion of it does come from that extra critical chance, which is very useful, especially with the staff, which we'll talk about. But the meat of this nerf is that you've lost 21% damage once every 5 seconds. Compare that to the greater ricochet, which is 80%. This happens twice as frequently because it's got a 5 second cooldown instead of a 10 second cooldown. This is very, very, like, across the board, just a 200% damage per minute nerf. 20 times, 20%, you activate the ability 10 times a minute. Every, 50 seconds, probably total on cooldown, right? It should be fairly early on most people's bars. Where Greater Ricochet lost 400% damage a minute, this lost 200%. That's the whole kind of story. This is used potentially by people who have a, who are closer, who are doing more new to PVM content, who have maybe a 200-250,000 damage a minute rotation if you're camping dual wield for magic. It's still going to be probably magic's strongest basic ability with the critical chance buff. It probably still bumps it to be just a little bit above Corruption Blast, although the two are very comparable. If you've got multiple targets, Corruption Blast is still probably better. But generally speaking, they've taken a little bit of damage off, but they've kept the number of times it hits, which again, stack with poison, they stack with the Blood Reaver. Obviously no Criminal Bolts here, but it's probably still magic's best basic ability, and it's still one tick shorter than it was. And I don't know, I think very similar story to the last one, right? It's a 2-3% damage nerf. There's your tagline for this: 2-3% damage nerf to dual wield camping on magic. But it still hits all the same boxes, right? It's still the best single target damage ability.
Yeah, you're not gonna really notice too much of a difference on that, is what I'm hearing from this. And it's just all about ensuring that the game is healthy going forward and things aren't too powerful, because if they are, then you wind up with bigger problems down the line. So
absolutely,
I have no concerns with this, but I've never been a person to spell the end of days on this. And I think when we discussed this ability initially, we thought it was perhaps maybe a bit too powerful, so changes had to be made on that.
Magic is, dual wield magic is still notably stronger than it was 3 weeks ago by a pretty healthy margin. I feel fine about this change.
All right. Let's talk about two-handed magic then, with the instability special attack on the staff of Armadale, which this week they have restored the ability for auto attack critical hits to fire off extra spell casts, and fixed an issue where the extra spell cast from the staff was doing offhand damage if you were using dual-wielding weapons, and extra spell cast can only fire off if the critical hit is on the main target, which was, I think, the main problem people were seeing from this.
There's a couple things to unpack with this. First of all, just as your tagline for the update, I think it hit the mark. I think it landed where it should have, ish. I spent a long time, so I did the math for this, I think, on Monday or Tuesday, and I posted it in the BNB Discord. And I redid that math today because I made a number of mistakes the last time I did it. It did not change very much, interestingly. Before we dive into that very brief and related tangent, we were talking the last time we were here. I think David and I were having a back and forth about how magic lacked really good special attacks. There wasn't a whole lot of place to dump extra adrenaline, which is kind of what the, like, you could now build a whole bunch of extra adrenaline by using Tsunami having a low adrenaline cost and then building adrenaline off of that, because it does give you adrenaline back. And interestingly, one of the things that can be used with this new staff is a special attack from the Armadale battle staff, which everybody was like, huh, these are going to be so useful when the new staff comes out. Maybe we're going to use it to make that staff. We didn't use it to make the staff, but the Armadale battle staff is a 5-hit channeled ability, which their magic only has 3 or 4 channeled abilities. And interestingly, just when the Rex Matriarch came out, they released a ring that every channeled ability hit from magic increases the critical chance by 4% while that crit is firing off.
Hang on, I just need to remind everybody here that we're talking about the Armadale battle staff and its special attack, and not the tier 95 special attack. I just wanted to make that clear.
Wild. Yep. That's true. So this is the tier 88 weapon that people are now putting into Essence of Finality amulets, because you can get up to 20% additional crit chance using the Channeler's Ring with this staff. And crit chance is going to increase the damage output by the Armadale Battle Staff spec, which obviously fires off additional auto attacks every time you crit. And this change that they did made it so that each crit can then fire off an additional, like if you critical hit something, that fires off an auto attack. If they auto attack, then critical hits, that auto attack can then fire off another auto attack. So what this makes is that the higher critical chance you have, the more likely you are to get those recursive hits repetitively. So if you have, you know, if you theoretically had 100% critical chance, you would get infinite damage. If you had 50% critical chance, you would get 90% ability damage, or 90% weapon damage, sorry, every time this hits. If you have 33% critical damage, which is the highest roughly passive critical chance you can get, reasonably speaking.
And now the problem is to make sure that we never hit that 100% critical hit chance.
Right. So you can hit about 49% if you have a 5 channeled hit from the staff, the Armadale Battle Staff special attack, with a Grimoire active, with the Biting perk active, with optionally, if you want to, the either the Berserker's Ring, or no, sorry, no, the Channeler's Ring's already on there. And you can get like another extra 5% from the Critical Scroll from the Calgarian Demons, which on top of a base chance of 5%. So you can approach 50% for like one ability hit every once in a while, but generally speaking, your average crit chance on magic, which is wild because it bounces around so much, especially with Greater Concentrated Blast, your average crit chance is going to be about 33%, which is to say that using all buffs, including a Grimoire, remember, so if you're using a Grimoire and you're 4-tick auto-attacking with this staff, it should give you roughly 30,000 additional damage over the length of the activation. Which is to say it does about 25% more damage for 30 seconds. Which is exactly in line with the Eldritch Crossbow and the Zaro's Godsword, which is right where we wanted it to land.
And this is exactly the reason why people are going to want this tier 95 staff, because this only...
Well, here's the problem.
Okay.
That's using a Grimoire, which we all know, you know, is very expensive to use per hour.
Yeah.
That's, you know, with the
7
perk,
mil
I think,
prior to last week's updates.
Yes, probably a little cheaper now. Those are going down, thank God. But if you're just doing Slayer, you don't have a Grimoire active, your average crit chance is closer to 20%. That decreases the damage output of this staff by about half, interestingly. So if you've got 18 to 20% crit chance, which is where you're landing on the
Slayer
staff.
Now we're talking about the tier 95 staff, right?
Correct, okay. Yes. We're going to stay on the tier 95 staff for the rest of this. It was just a note that the Staff of Armadale is an option when you are full crit setup and you're tryharding. You can drop some really hot damage. If you're regular Slayer, you're camping the staff, you've got Biting perk and no Grimoire. You're hitting additional, every time you hit the creature with the effect active, you're doing about 25% weapon damage. The short version of this is you get 15 to 20,000 extra damage from the staff, which is still to say it's a bunch of damage for 50% adrenaline, so fair enough. Like, it's still a special that you would use on Slayer, but it's not going to, it's going to be like 10 to 15% extra damage instead of 25 if you're not in the full tryhard setup, which is a little bit underwhelming considering that the Eldritch Crossbow does kind of maintain that 25%. The Zaro's Godsword means you can't move from the spot you're standing on, but that's kind of a melee thing, so I feel pretty okay about that. Once again, kind of ranged reigns king on this one. But it fits in the highest tier of really try-hard damage. This ticks the same box as those two do. And like the Eldritch Crossbow, it allows you to move while it's active. So,
and this is probably what people are looking
for. Perspective,
at that tier 95 level.
People with tier 95s are looking for those big damage numbers and they're trying their best. So it seems to hit the mark from my perspective.
And it's not absurdly broken like it was previously.
Yeah, is that I'm giving you average numbers, right? Which
yeah,
are inclusive of the recursive hits and all. But this is like, it's so dependent on hitting those crits, and it's a low chance to happen. If you get lucky and you hit 4, 5, 6, 7 crits in a row, on like a 20% or a 30% chance, this number skyrockets like mad, Shane. It is you can do 100,000 damage in 3-4 game ticks with this. Like, it's really crazy. If you get lucky, so it's very high highs, but it's also very low lows. It's not consistent.
So basically, if you get lucky, it can still do what it was doing before it was changed.
Yeah. It's potentially like a speedrunner-y type thing if you've got something you can only attack with magic. It's like, you do this until you get the good RNG.
Yeah, and you know...
Or you just get lucky with the RNG sometimes, and it just feels good, right? And, like, which is also considerable.
My concern with this is that over time, we're going to see more crit chance added to game.
Maybe. They have been fairly reticent about adding it, and they're pretty conservative with the numbers when they do. It's one of those things we get one buff for every couple of years, and they're usually pretty small. Obviously, the rings were this year's. I think last year, right, we had the critical scrolls from the Calgarian Demons, which don't really get used that often, frankly. The year before that, a couple years before that, we had the Grimoire. And then a couple years more before that, we had, or I guess around that time, we had the Biting Perk from Invention. But it's been a decade to kind of get to the point where we're at.
Okay, so not too bad then. Not too bad.
I mean, it's something they could definitely just like, oh, hey, by the way, here's an ability that has a bunch of crit chance on it. which, looking at you, greater concentrated blast. But the other thing to consider with this is that this staff special cannot really be used in Essence of Finality.
No.
Greater concentrated blast increases your crit chance by 15%, but it does require you to be on dual wield. And a dual wield auto attack only does about 40% of the same damage that a staff auto attack would do, which means way less effective. You do not want to be using this thing in an Essence of Finality while you're wielding a wand. So, there's that too.
Okay, so it in effect balances itself out then. It gives
a buff to dual wield magic or to two hand magic, where G-Conk is a buff to dual wield magic.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It balances itself out. Okay.
So anyways, that's it. That's my balance changes. Longer than expected, I apologize.
No, it's fine. We got the core essence of Ricochet and Concentrated Blast. I think those are what people came here for, of course, because, of course, everyone was spelling the end of days about that when the update launched this week. I saw some people doing it.
I had friends that had already, like, day of release, removed all of their perks and ended up remaking them because they realized it wasn't as big of a deal as they thought it was, which is unfortunate. But yeah, it's people definitely reacted very strongly to this because we don't get nerfed very often, as we talked about before. So
No. All right. We, of course, have a couple other things to touch on here, including God Banter at Centistan this week. But before we do that, I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters for this episode. So this week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Brock H., Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jesse W., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Soupfinder, Stub Eve, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It does truly mean the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, just check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb for as little as $1 a month. You gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits. Those are our monthly bonus shows we do, and boy, we had a wonderful one last week about the first-time user experience of RuneScape. We actually figured out what it is that makes RuneScape tick at its core, and we weren't intending on doing that. Now, were we, Tannis?
It sounds like a typical monthly bit, but yes, no, we didn't intend to set out for that, but we uncovered something a lot deeper along the way.
Listen to this monthly bit if you want to know what makes RuneScape so addicting that everybody's been playing it for 20 years for. We figured that out. We figured that out on that episode. I might be overselling it, but I think that is what it comes down to when you put the terms RuneScape and Core Loop together. You'll know what I'm talking about if you heard us talk about Core Loops, effectively how a game works and feeds back on itself. But you get all that and more for $1 a month if you want to take it up a tier. We have a $3 a month tier where you get a VIP Ranghun Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll become an insider and get outtakes, clips that we used to make the clip show before they reach the clip show at the end of the year, in addition to everything else. You can learn more at patreon.com/rsbnb. Currently, we're working to a Patreon mail out. Should we reach $200 a month? Every patron who provides shipping info will receive a special gift from us. And should we ever reach 500 a month, Tanis and I, and maybe a couple others, will subject our taste buds to a wide range of spice with the Hot Ones Challenge. You fan of spicy foods there, Thaxi?
Oh, no, you'd get some good reactions out of me on that one.
Well, maybe we'll put you on the short list. But nonetheless, you want to learn more about this, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. Okay, so let's talk about the additional action bars we got this week, because this was Ninja Strike 25, they're calling it. More action bars, two new action bar presets for members for a total of 15. You can now name your action bar presets the same way you name bank presets, with a drop-down list of options. And this is found in the action bar submenu in settings. Also renamed various instances of action bar in the settings interface to action space bar. You can now also toggle the save states of action bars with custom interface layouts. And this will only apply to layouts that were saved after this week's update. And this was a very obscure patch note, to the point that Mod Carry had to go out there and further explain this. So prior to yesterday's update, or prior to this week's update, if any combination of additional action bars were enabled, switching between custom interface layouts would move the action bars to wherever they were in the saved custom layout, or to a default position if they were not saved in that custom layout, or to a default position if using a default layout. However, there was no control as to how many action bars were visible in any given layout, and players would be stuck with the same amount every time. Now, with this, a change was included to allow players to have control over how many additional action bars would be shown in a custom layout. So, for example, you may now choose to have additional action bars 1 and 2 on custom layout 1, but additional action bars 1, 2, and 3 on custom layout 2. So, if you find any of your action bars are disappearing, this is because you will now have to save what number of additional action bars are visible in your custom interface layout. However, you cannot specify which action bar preset is unique to each interface layout. This was not the case before this week's update, and it's still not the case. So as a reminder, you can do this for each custom interface layout by going to Gameplay Settings, Combat and Action Bar, and Action Bar, and enabling any additional action bars to your preference. Okay, so that is a huge mouthful with this, and what this does, and they address later in the news post, is that they need a way to load a specific set of action bars into the UI more easily without using interface presets, because, of course, we only have 4 interface presets to work with. So right. What they did with this, in the meantime, they're looking to add a hotfix to players who have yet to log in since the update this week, which will stop action bars from clearing on screen when switching between layouts to avoid any further confusion. And yeah, this was needed. I wanted to do this when I set up my action bar for Carapac, but it wasn't possible at the time. My only big concern with this, with most of these patch notes that come in, is how is someone 6 months down the line going to know this is how it works? Because this is not intuitive whatsoever.
Well, I think, so here's, I mean, the way that this is working right now is that, or, you know, post-change, right? Is that if I have, I use 4 action bars, because I've got one for prayers, one for random stuff, one for defenses and healing, and then my Revo/, style-specific bar, right? When I'm skilling, I definitely want to watch YouTube on the other half of my little computer laptop screen.
Well,
because
yeah,
that's who I am. Student life. And so my preset 4 is this, it's literally 4 inches wide of RuneScape on the side of my screen. And that does not include, so I always had to remove my extra second, third, and fourth action bars in order to make that preset work, because otherwise everything was way out of whack. And the way this works now is that I just set up that preset to say there's no action bars in it, and then I save it, and when I swap to that preset, I don't have those action bars, and when I swap back to my regular presets that I use for combat or Slayer, what have you, full screen, my action bars show back up. Like, it happens that, like, whereas previously I had to specifically turn them off while I was setting up the new preset, and every time thereafter, now I can just set up the preset and it just looks the same every time. I don't have to redo it.
Yeah, and you know, we also
which
have
I think
a,
makes sense.
We also have a problem that you can't name custom presets. They're just named my custom 1 through 4, which is another thing
that would be
nice to
you have to
have
remember,
in the
which
future.
If you leave and play other games.
Yeah. 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 So I don't know. I mean, it's definitely something that helps, but people are going to need to know about this at some point in the future. So I think I'm going to nibble this entire patch notes segment on this because it's something that needs to be known. And I don't know. I don't know. Do you change action bars, Tanis, or do you just run with one given the magnifier?
Well, I mean, I have one per style, and then but I have a couple for skilling runs and stuff.
Yeah, same. but how many? Do you
I don't
have
know
on
that
screen?
We needed.
Oh, just one.
Okay.
I only need one. And then I open, like, I used to open up, like, the defense abilities in case I needed
right.
to hit anticipation or something like that. And I guess I have prayers open, too.
Yeah. You can also save the main action bars minimized and maximized state within the custom interface layouts now as well. So that's good. Mm-hmm. Action bars are no longer use numbered wording such as secondary or quinary, and will instead be called additional action bar number.
Words you use in regular language. Quinary. Oh boy.
Oh, that's so amusing. The primary action bar is now the main action bar. Action bar presets 1 through 15 are called action bar presets 1 through 15 in game. Specified that the keybinds for switching action bar presets are only for the main action bar, and added line breaks to the action bar keybind settings within the keybind interface. They've also added more descriptive text to various settings and options within the action bar binding settings, and an issue has been fixed where the max hit points figure would not show if the player had 5 digits of hit points and the primary action bar was compacted horizontally.
I saw this so often for months. It didn't bother me, but I'm glad it's fixed.
Yeah, and, you know, anytime you chop off an element of the UI like that, you're really not doing the player right. a good service.
I mean,
so
I could see that the red bar wasn't full, so I wasn't at full health points, but right. I could only see how many points I had at the time, which, again, was enough, but you never know. It's nice to be able to see the denominator there.
User interface-wise, interface tutorials for the bank, shop, smelting, and smithing interfaces will now only occur when a player triggers them from the help button for the interface or during the Berthorpe paths in Berthorpe and Taverly. PC and Steam users that install a fresh client or have recently cleared their cache will now see a terms and conditions pop up on first load up, and players will now be prompted to enter a valid date of birth when logging into the game if they haven't already done so. And there is your patch notes for the week. I'm glad the action bar changes were done, but there definitely needs to be some discussion on that going forward and making that just more widely known to how that works, because you're going to have to look something like that up if you're wondering.
Hopefully, that's one of those people will just notice that their bars are... like, it's one of those things that... You would just need to recreate your presets. You just resave them as you want them to be, and it'll work perfectly. But unless you resave your presets, you'll just have to continue to sit, because they'll be continue to save with that extra action bar in there.
Yeah. All right. So, last week I knew I was forgetting something with this podcast, and we forgot to go through the God banter for last week, which was really starting to ramp up. So I'm just going to go through some key points from this that we missed on that. Were we here last week, Tanis? Was I here last week? Because I don't even remember who was on the show last week. It was just you and me, right?
I think so.
Okay. I have no recollection of last week's show whatsoever. That's probably not a good thing. This week... in week 3, Saradomin and Armadil are back at it again in one another. Saradomin says that, "Oh, Armadil, you look tired. I could channel some of that anima for you to ease your burden. Then Zamorak pipes in, Ceridoman helps the wounded bird by helping himself. Better that than send more power your way. And there is this back and forth between Zamorak, Ceridoman, and Armadyl. And Armadyl reclaims the mantle of balance figure and says, "Silence. Which of you two has slain a god in recent ages?" Of course, he's talking about when he killed Bandos. Saren says he has a point. Armadyl says, "I have all the strength I need. More as it happens, but I abhor grandstanding. I do what must be done for Gelinor's people at any cost. If you could only put aside your clamoring for power, think of what we gods could achieve." Now, this is something that previously I think he would have only said for his aviancies. Is this a new aspect or a new facet of Armadyl that we're seeing yet again?
That's a good point. This is one of the first times that he's spoken as a protector of Gelinor as a whole, as opposed to, you know, just Abaddon, the people of the Aviancy.
Yeah. Ceridoman effectively says that he's looking for the exact thing, strength, to aid his subjects and wisdom to guide them. But he admits that the way has not always been clear. He's done things that he regrets, and he comes back onto the side of Armadyl that says the task is bigger than everyone. And you'll note that Saren has been very quiet this week. Zamorak ends this all by saying that, "I was there in the Third Age. We are all gods the same." Saren says these events change everything, and our actions in the battles to come will show who we truly are. So, of course, Saren, very, very quiet last week. But this week was also a very interesting one. Week 4 between Zamorak and Saren. I didn't think there was really much to take from week 3 aside from Armadyl standing for the people of Gelinor rather than just the Aviancy. But Zamorak asked Saren a very pointed question in week 4. "Did it hurt?" She says, "Are you talking to me?" He says, "When I thrust the staff through your dotard's brother's heart, did you feel it?" Ah, the twin question. A simple mind might well ask that. "Yes, I felt it when Zaros died, but not how you're hoping. No falling to my knees, no clutching my chest, no agonized gasps. Only unease, a sense that unstoppable events had been set in motion." And then, of course, Zamorak brings up the God Wars. Ceridoman asked, "How does burning a nation of innocents make anyone stronger?" And Armadyl says, "You couldn't stand to lose, so millions died. You are a blight upon this world." And Saren says, "It doesn't matter." Armadyl says, "What? All three of you." This is Saren speaking. "Your principles, your ambitions, your crimes, all are nothing next to Zaros' vision and will."
Yeah.
So more and more, she is falling back to that side of being very closely aligned with Zaros, even though that's something that has been...
I don't know if she's aligned.
Well,
I think she knows him better than anybody else did because of the centuries they spent together. I mean, millennia they spent together,
yeah.
Frankly, at the start of this revision. I mean, up until the revision was finished, the worlds were made by the time they left Frenisque, as far as I'm aware, as far as they kind of seem to imply,
yeah,
in the lore. So Saren should know him pretty well. And she just seems to be implying, I think, that she believes that he is capable of crazy things that are not, you know, in the best interest of, like, she seems to be applying a very teleological approach to Zaros, which is to say the ends for him justify any means.
And
she's
that's
concerned
what he's been
about
since
those means
the very beginning.
Yeah, which is true, which is absolutely true. So, I mean, they're discussing Zaros' fall in the Second Age, and, you know, very clearly he'd been absent for a while. There's a lot of things going on, but I think that it all comes back to that, is that Zaros is trying to figure something out, and you guys will discuss this to no end, I'm sure, in the Lore Diggers episode for discussing those mysteries. But Zaros and justify the means, and Saren, I think, is concerned as much as anybody else about that, because I don't think she has any idea what's going on. They had a very, like, their relationship history is so interesting, with Zaros being so attached to her when they were on Freniske, and then as he left and had his own kind of being, and that kind of destroyed her for a time, right? That, like, he was finding himself and doing things, and he came back changed, having slain Lornab. And that, you know, something has been dark in him since then. And obviously he was playing with the Monolith not too long after that, during his age and his empire. There's, you know, Zaros has some dark and very purpley history.
Yeah, there's definitely something here that Sarah knows that Zaros did that maybe we don't know, I think.
True. Could be. If nothing else, she knows what his intentions are better than we are, I think, and that's safe to say.
Probably not what the intentions are currently, I would say, right?
I think that's probably true. I mean, where we left things with the Battle of the Monolith, they definitely... Either Saren is a better actor than we would give her character credit for, or she really is, again, has reason to be concerned about her brother right now and what he will try to do. We're concerned about the world being safe from her brother, maybe.
Yeah.
Not concerned about his safety. Yeah. She knows he'll take care of himself.
And of course, this is all in a retrospective on the Third Age God Wars and whatnot, because Zamorak says
Zaros
that...
Zaros's death, the event that they're talking about at the very start of this, did it hurt? That's the end of the Second Age. Zamorak stabbing him, that was the last moment of the Second Age.
Yep.
And then Zaros is gone.
Yeah, that started the God War. And Zamorak called that a push, and he said, perhaps I did him a favor, because we know that's what Zamorak lives on, is kind of shaking up the pot to prevent stagnation. And Saren says, we now see the results of my brother being pushed. If these eggs hatch, nothing any of us done will matter. There will be no subjects to guide, no justice, no adversity, no life, just perfect, awful, primordial stillness. And is the push that she's talking about the push that Zamorak did at the start of the Third Age, or is this some other push that might be exerted on Zaros?
I think she did. I think that is the push she's talking about. I think Zaros was, you know, fairly comfortably enthroned and kind of... I don't think he was resting on his laurels. He clearly had other things going on, which, again, you'll talk about. But I think that it pushed him to action and pushed him to discover and reach into things, right? He got very close to Erebus with spoilers, and... I don't know. I think that pushing him into vanishing there for a while, which I think what we can kind of assume has happened, is that he got stabbed by Zamorak and kind of vanished into Erebus for a while as, like, dead but not really dead, because Erebus is apparently the land of the dead in Zerosian culture, right?
Yeah.
So that would make a logical sense for a place for him to have gone, to have kind of gained some of that dark energy and influence, which I think maybe play into some of the other decisions he makes around that time.
And by this logic, had Zamorak not done that, the Second Age Empire would have continued until something else threw it off its rocker. I can see where she's going, that push has led us to the point where we're at now, which, whether or not for better or worse, that would be, of course, an opinion that only Saren and Zaros could shed light on. And I mean, we're not going to get a clear answer on that. I'm just pointing out that that's what she's effectively saying with this. But she brings it back at the end, and she has been very duplicitous in this entire thing since City of Sintistan. But she brings it back in these four lines of text that effectively make it look like, oh no, I'm here. I'm on your guys' side again, but I don't think that's true anymore. The more and more we see of this, it's not true.
Okay, so I will say that I take issue with the word duplicitous here. Because duplicitous would imply that she is saying one thing and meaning or doing another. And I really do believe that she, at some level, has the best interest of Gilenor at heart, right? She is there, she's siphoning the eggs. You know, she can't be all bad looking for the destruction of us all. I think she's trying to find a solution where, you know, the happy ending that probably won't exist, and she's going to have to eventually make her priorities. But she's very much seems to be riding the line of right now of like, I can do it all. I can save everyone. I can save the world and make people. And I think it's stressing her out. And I think she's had a lot of stress otherwise recently. I think she's really concerned about what Zaris is doing in there. I think she truly doesn't know. I think, or more specifically, I trust that Zaris would not have confided in her. I think he trusts her zero none and has trusted her zero none since he left her in the first place and slayed Lurnab and realized the influence that she has had over him for the very for the majority of the early part of his life.
Yeah.
And I think he doesn't trust her at all. I think she has no idea what's going on. I think she's actually upset and has and concerned about what Zaris is doing.
And there's probably a part of her that wants the relationship to go back to how it was before he left Franiske.
She's the embodiment of caring, and she makes the other people in the world care and want to, like, right? It's that caring and devotion.
Yeah.
And I think that she's caring about everything right now, and eventually she's going to have to decide what she cares for most. And I think that's going to be, one, pivotal for her character, but also, you know, pivotal for the world.
Right, and at that point...
And it will change what we're doing in the long run.
And if it's too hard for her to make that decision, that could be the impetus for her to shatter herself again. Who knows,
true.
Right?
Which... Also, we do have to remember that and as much as I paint her at least in a very bright kind of a way, the Dark Lord, our lovely friend the Shadow Bits, is still to some degree part of who she is. That's an aspect of her personality, is that I will do whatever it takes to, you know, take care of my people and to take care of the, you know, whatever I see as my priority at the time.
Yeah,
and
we got
to
remember
that Dark Lord is where
that.
We have to. Have to, you know, still, I believe, again, ask Questcaping about this one, because he will know exactly what the status of the Dark Lord is, if he was actually shattered, and if we killed him or imprisoned him, or if he's still maybe in there with Saren.
I think we addressed this at some point in the past on a show.
I'm sure you did.
And,
maybe 5 years ago.
What we came to is that the Dark Lord is still a small part of Saren.
Yeah, I think that's a fair thing to say. And I think that, like... It's not duplicitous, but she's definitely being mysterious, and as far as Saren is concerned, that is probably concerning.
All right, we can leave that there, and I don't believe that Zaros is the RuneScapian or the Gilenorian equivalent of the ex-president of the United States. I do not believe that. I don't know how that came out. So, all right, let's move on to our picks of the week then, because... We'll do that, then we'll talk about some achievables. So I've been running around in a game, and this is a game that came out back in June. And, you know, I've always wanted a game like this, and I think this is one you might enjoy, Tannis.
Right.
It's called Sniper Ghost Warrior Contracts 2. They've had a franchise that went back years. And this is a game where you are encouraged to... complete your contracts, they're called, which is effectively going out to take out key objectives or key people, and you're encouraged to do it stealthily. And some of the ways you do it stealthily can, of course, be with little bits and bobs of technology like drones, or you can physically go in and hack something. But a good portion of the gameplay is actually done with your sniper rifle. And some of the sniper shots that we're dealing with are in the excess range of 1,000 meters plus, 1 kilometer. And this is something that I've always wanted in a game. You know, it's a welcome departure from the usual Call of Duty types or even the Battlefield types where you just go in, run and gun, and reach your objective and try and do something. It's still first-person shooter, of course. But it's got a lot more tactical planning to it, and you are rewarded for staying stealth, because if you don't stay stealth, the game becomes more difficult. And one thing that I am really proud of with how this game works, and this is something why it took a couple weeks to do this as pick of the week, is I went through the first two regions for the game, and you can... make it as hard as you like in terms of having no HUD elements on to help you. As in, if you're taking a shot at 1,000 meters plus, the wind is going to affect which way the bullet is going to go. And it's going to be up to you to figure that out based on which way the grass is blowing near your target. or you can take it and make it all the way on the far easy end of the spectrum to the point where you have a red dot that will show you exactly where the bullet is going to land. And the wind and the elevation that you're shooting from, all this stuff factors in, and it makes for a really fun experience. And you can find this on Steam. It's a PC game. It's also on Xbox and PS4 as well. And there's also just a really neat feature of it. When you take one of these long-range snipe shots, it will actually do a bullet cam in such a way that it will show the path that the projectile takes from where you are all the way to the target. And that's something that's fun to watch as well. So I've been enjoying it, and you can give it a look. Sniper Ghost Warrior Contracts 2, available on Steam and Xbox and PS4.
Nice. Sounds like something I might give a shot.
Yeah, and
give it a shot.
And I initially thought of you because what I wanted to do was look at the accessibility angles of it and see just how accessible I could make it. And it's really accessible in that. So that's what I wanted to do before bringing it here to Pick of the Week. I just wanted to have that discussion so I could bring that forward to you.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it from your description, it kind of reminds me of an older game I used to play on PS2, the Siphon Filter, which was the same kind of thing. You tried to be stealthy. If you weren't, things are going to turn out bad for you. And it was almost impossible to fight your way out of that stuff. Like, you had to be stealthy.
Yeah.
So, I'll give that a shot. Where can we check that out at?
Steam, Xbox, PS4.
Steam?
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Faxi, I believe you want to do a pick of the week.
Yeah, my pick of the week is a game called My Time at Porsche. It just came out for mobile for Android and iOS on August 4th, which is kind of what brought it into my sphere. I've been looking at it for a while. It's been out for PC. I believe it's also out on some of the several console platforms. And it's very much a Stardew Valley kind of Harvest Moon style of game. Workshop management sim. The biggest difference being that it was made in the Unity engine, so it's the graphics on it are not 16-bit. They're actually fairly well done, and it does run really nicely on my phone with minimal loading screens. But so story-wise, for the game, kind of the apocalypse has already happened. Humanity has reemerged and is kind of rebuilding and rediscovering some of the simpler technology. And you play as a builder, and you just run a workshop, and so you're kind of creating and managing all of your machines as you're like running around this town of Porsche, kind of getting to know and building relationships with the villagers. You're doing like daily workshop commissions to like improve your workshop, and they have a whole story, like main storyline that comes with this that is take place over a couple of in-game years. Which is to say it's 100 to 200 hours, 100, 150 hours probably to like really finish the game. Very kind of straightforward. I mean, very similar to your Stardew Valley kind of backgrounds in terms of you've got like your mining, your lumbering and hunting monsters for resources. Combat's a very straightforward kind of hack and slash type thing with your camera that works very similar to like the RuneScape camera. But you can heal and buff yourself in the pause menu. So it's relatively speaking, low kind of stress from that way. And just very, very straightforward. Days in the game are about 20 minutes of real time, so pretty easy to pick up and put down. The game itself is just gorgeous. And that's it. It's, you know, relatively straightforward kind of management sim, very low-key, relaxing kind of an adventure, which is very much what I've been needing the last while. So it's been a good kind of break from everything.
Nice.
Been doing that kind of in between things, was working on a little bit while I was getting archaeology grinds going, those kind of things.
Yeah, it looks like it's available on Android and iOS. It's also available on Steam, Good Old Games, Humble, PS4, Xbox, and Switch. So it's everywhere.
Yes. And the sequel to it is actually out in beta right now, I believe, alpha or beta on Steam. So my time at, I think it's Sandrock is the next one. So they're going forward with it. It clearly did fairly well. So
nice.
There you go.
Good. All right. Let's do some achievements here. As we said, it was going to be a busy week this week with double XP, but we've got it handled. So starting off on August 18th, Taryn Aldon got 99 archaeology. Nordic Falcon got 99 construction. Luke XF got 99 fletching on the 16th, as well as Riora got 99 fletching. We also have Roladude 540 with 120 farming. Yitzi got 120 farming as well on the 16th. We have Crying Wolf with 99 fletching and invention on the 15th. Dennis got 120 cooking. Arendil 20 got 120 invention. Harlot Man got 99 magic. Kedgeworth with 120 strength. Kiki with 99 fishing. And Luke XF again, also on the 15th, with 99 ranged, Herblore, and summoning. Then Nathan got 120 Herblore. Riora got 99 construction. Simply Skells got 99 runecrafting. Taryn Aldon again with 99 Herblore. And Twisted Soul with 99 smithing. Well done.
Very nice. Then moving on the 14th, Alosif got 99 crafting. Avocado got 120 attack and strength. Bart Nils got 99 cooking. Also on the 14th, Crying Wolf with 99 divination. Delta Polo with 99 fletching. Simply Scales with 99 cooking. Syro Aces with 120 herblore. Uber Plastic with 99 Hunter. Vodka B with 120 Archaeology. Brewski 17 got 99 Smithing on the 13th. Juju Macon with 99 Hunter on the 13th. River Design with 99 Defense on the 13th. Simply Scales with 99 Agility and Divination both on the 13th. Twisted Soul with 99 Thieving on the 13th. Zabros with 99 Invention on the 13th. Zabros again with 99 Defense. And take it away, Taxi.
On August 12th, we had Borosoro with 120 Farming. Crazy Leg 722 with 99 Slayer. Darkest Night with 99 Fletching. Jujumakan with 99 Crafting and Mining. Kaluna with 120 Archaeology, Queen RuPaul with 99 Summoning, Quests Are Awesome with 120 Attack, River Design with 99 Constitution, Shamrock Soup with 99 Strength, and Zerdones with 120 Dungeoneering. On August 11th, we had Aliasith with 99 Thieving, Houndears with 99 Farming, Prideus with 99 Fletching, and Queen Adena with 99 crafting, ranged, fletching, and defense. Well done, everybody.
Nice job.
This didn't seem like as big of a double XP achievement haul as we had most weeks, did it, Tannis?
No, maybe people did like I did and used it as an opportunity to really get their grindy
120s out and whatnot. That could be the state that we're at, honestly.
And we're having them often enough that maybe it's just the norm now is that people are taking it a little bit easier on them, which maybe is healthy.
Yeah. Speaking of grind, what did you do on double XP, Tannis?
So over the double XP, I actually did mining, because I wanted to do something that I could, one, I could play mobily, two, that I could do the little Steam trick where I use Steam Link and then was able to sit on the couch and just kind of, yeah. And plus I figure I could only do so much farming at a time. That's the only 120 that I have. So
yeah.
I would go do my farm and then I'd go mine. And that was kind of, you know, that's kind of how that worked out. And then on the other, and I used all 48 hours, but then over the weekend I got special treat and found that Steam had released the first Final Fantasy, the very original first one for NES, and I picked that up for fun.
I bet that'd put a dent in it, hey?
You know, they're getting really good at selling me games that I already own in other forms.
God bless.
That's wonderful. How about you, Faxi?
Yeah, I have been. I used the first 4 or 5 hours of my double XP on just burning through about 12 mil construction XP worth of planks. Got another couple of levels there after got after
protein
the pet.
Or.
Protean, okay. Protean for these. Okay. I sold all of my leftover mahogany planks. I wanted to just spam click and enjoy some YouTube or whatever I was doing at the time, podcast, I think, something. And then I ended up being logged in and using about half of my double XP total. I wanted to get the Nodon journal for to get my Master Quest Cape unlocked before the archaeology released and took it away again. So I did, I got up to 1,300 Nodon Dragonkin killed before I got that drop. So I used some double XP for that. But yeah, I think I had, and I did some Dungeoneering, because I do a little bit of Dungeoneering every double XP. One, like, full ring reset, nice 5-6 hours, just for kicks and giggles, because I enjoy it.
I might call you up on that next time, then.
Please, I have so much fun. I mean, I go on World 77. And I just rush through floors, but I'm happy to go with other people and just, you know, host floors and just grab any extras and just go for it. It's nice and fast. I enjoy the skill enough that just go and do it once in small bursts, right? Yeah, like this is 4 to 5 hours once every 3 months.
Yeah,
perfect.
That's perfect. That's enough.
It gets me several million XP every time. Yeah. So it's always nice.
And that's the idea. I was thinking too. I used about 5 or 6 hours of my double XP. I really just didn't get into much this time. I did a bunch of Slayer tasks on it. I got Lost Grove creatures or Lost Groceries, as we talked about last week, depending what the phone wants to call them. Had an Abyssal Demon task that came up. Also had a Nodon Dragonkin task that came up. And I think that was, yeah, those were the main tasks. Those were the main tasks of note. Everything else was kind of smaller. I got the defense pet while doing the Nodon Dragonkin.
Yay!
So there's Boy. That. And this whole venture into Slayer every so often on double XP has really started to make me think about how Slayer was, when it initially came out in 2005, was designed to solve a problem that most people in-game at the time really only killed 1 to 2 monsters for their combat XP. And since then, the core of Slayer has remained the same, even with it going to 120. And, you know, I've come to my conclusion that that's what really bothers me about this, because you can have as innovative of an NPC as you can get, like a Lost Grove creature with a mechanic or a Hydrix dragon with a mechanic to it. But it's just still the same thing that it's been since 2005. And there's something about that that bothers me. So I'm going to try and talk a bit about that later in the month and see if I can come up with any solutions on that. And I was telling some people that, honestly, at this point, I would have rather been killing something like Karapak or Araxor instead of doing Slayer.
Reaper tasks?
Yeah, and that's what else I did. I did some Reaper tasks.
Yay.
GWD1 and God Wars Dungeon 2 as well.
Good options.
But that's where I'm at with Slayer, and it just doesn't feel right. And I know Tanis disagrees with me horrendously on that.
Hey, it's one of my faves. I don't know. It's a lot of variety and spice of life, you know, or you can, I like how you can tune it and just dial in. I don't know.
The niche that it filled in 2005 is very slightly refined, but very clearly still the flavor of the skill today. And I think it still fills a niche that needs to somehow be filled.
Yeah, it does. So, but I just want there to be something else in addition what we have at, you know, how the farming and herb lord training changed post 99. I'd like to see something like that for Slayer. But
you know, Shane, maybe
play around dungeons and
maybe.
Yeah, utilize that, you know, more, but I'm wondering if you should spend more time in Sofenheim. Cause there's some really good Slayer creatures, and I think
last double XP
right at the level that you would
right that, last double XP. You know, I did a couple tests down there. I really didn't enjoy it.
Really? Oh, okay.
Pretty much depends on the creatures. Those beetles drive me up the wall. I'm telling you.
Well,
could be the worst.
Yeah, some whatever the people are, the zombie things, and crocodiles are a good one. Well, don't do the gorillas; probably kick your ass.
Yeah, and I mean, there's just lots of questions about that, and that's something I want to kind of dive into. But I believe that wraps this episode of RSBNB Update. It was indeed Zaros that went into the monolith, not that other person. And
it was spades the whole time. The spades, they were there.
Yeah, it was the spades. Ba-ba-bum. It was the spades.
Horta does look kind of like a monolith.
And there's also spades in Sniper Ghost Warrior contracts, too, as well. So there's that. Oh, okay. But thank you, everybody, for being here. If you enjoyed this episode, please do consider subscribing to us on your preferred podcast listener. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Casts, and more. Also, of course, YouTube, youtube.com/RSBNB. We post the nibbles there and video versions of the show. Give a like and subscribe on that. Even if you listen to the audio version, it helps us out for discovery. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for Yak Track and the reveal of the Wendfront. So see you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Watch with the spades!